the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
So if you've been around at Belmont for the last couple of months, we've been going through a series which we've entitled Songs for the Road. And this effectively is a series in which we're following in the footsteps of the pilgrims, so the people of Israel, as they journey up from wherever they may be, in and around the land, up to the holy city and up to Jerusalem. So what we've been looking at is Psalms 120 right through to Psalm 134, and we are on 132 today. So what we've been trying to do is effectively climb with the pilgrim from wherever they may be up to this holy city. And it really was quite an ascent or a climb. Now, sir, perhaps you can cast your mind back if you were in and around Belmont around Easter time for Palm Sunday. One of our members, Rosie Stewart, gave us a poem, didn't she, about Jesus's ascent up to Jerusalem. And I just want to read a little bit from it. I'm absolutely not going to do it justice. So it was called Jericho to Jerusalem, wasn't it? And it started with this phrase, 18 miles and uphill all the way. Jericho to Jerusalem, from 800 feet below sea level to the holy city, more than 2,000 feet above. It was not a journey for the faint-hearted. So just in that little reminder, we are heading on our way uphill. And if you're anything like me, if you find yourself in a scenario where you are climbing up a hill or you're ascending a mountain, I'd probably go for hills rather than mountains, but you're making your way fairly near the top, you're getting near to the top, and what might you do? You might have a stop, have a breather, and turn around and just take a look at the view and see where you've come from. Perhaps you might also take a look and see if you can pick out the path that you've wandered along on your journey. Or maybe if you're even more like me, you might just need to flop yourself onto a big rock for 10 minutes and lie there wheezing because you wasn't as fit as you once thought you were. So what we're going to do now is just take a look at the little route that we've taken so far. So we've gone from Psalm 120 right over to Psalm 132. And we've covered so many different topics. If we have a look down at this road and see where we've come from, we've covered so many different topics. Let me just read them out to you. We've covered repentance, providence, worship, service, help, security, joy, work, happiness, perseverance, hope, humility. And now today, we're going to take a look at obedience. And in your Bible, all those topics we've covered, that's just like three or four pages just in the Psalms of Ascent. And I think probably the thing that stuck out for me most as we've been going through this series, not just in the mornings, but in the evenings and in our home groups as well, has been just the sheer range of emotions that we've encountered as we've been journeying along this road. And we've engaged with just the sheer breadth of what it means to be a person, of what it means to have human emotions. We've gone from heart-wrenching sorrow, dark depression, radiant joy, honest questioning, even daily tedium, righteous anger, exuberant praise, and many more. And we can find those just in the couple of Psalms that we've taken a look at in our series here. So we've not only covered a whole range of topics, but a whole range of emotions. And I think one of the things that has surprised me most is just how we're to bring all these emotions, no matter what we're feeling today, we're to bring these emotions in worship to God. So I've been reading this article by this chap called Joe Holland, who puts it this way. We can understand how the Bible might teach us how to think, And we're a university town, aren't we? We're quite good at the thinking stuff. We can answer problems, and we are all up here a lot of the time, aren't we? We're good at thinking. However, very few consider how the Bible might teach us how to feel. And so he says, the Psalms serve as the tutors of our affections. So I think just in our series and just having a look as a whole, as we stand on the mountain and see where we've come from, we are to bring to God this full range of emotion, from that dark depression right up to radiant joy. All of it can be expressed to God, and we can find its expression in the Psalms here. So I think we're probably quite happy with the idea that we're to worship God regardless of how we're feeling. We've probably picked up on that as we've gone through the series. But perhaps if we use the Psalms like it's meant to be used, like Jesus' hymn book, then we can worship God even with how we're feeling, with any emotion that we're bringing, be that deepest sorrow to radiant joy, grief even, and just the daily tedium of life. We can bring that to God. So let's have a read, without further ado, from Psalm 132. You'll find that in the church Bibles, you'll find that on 596. So if you'd like to turn there, we'll read together. So Psalm 132, a song of ascent. Lord, remember David and all his self-denial. He swore an oath to the Lord and made a vow to the Mighty One of Jacob. I will not enter my house or go to my bed. I will allow no sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids till I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling for the Mighty One of Jacob. We heard of it in Ephrathah. We came upon it in the fields of Yah. Let us go to his dwelling place. Let us worship at his footstool, saying, Arise, Lord, and come to your resting place, you and the ark of your might. May your priests be clothed with righteousness, and may your faithful people sing for joy. For the sake of your servant David, do not reject your anointed one. The Lord swore an oath to David, a sure oath that he will not revoke. One of your own descendants I will place on your throne, if your sons keep my covenant and the statutes that I teach them. Then their sons shall sit on your throne forever and ever. For the Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his dwelling place. This is my resting place forever and ever. Here I'll sit enthroned, for I've desired it. I'll bless her with abundant provisions, and her poor I will satisfy with food. I'll clothe her priests with salvation, and her faithful people shall ever sing for joy. Here I'll make a horn grow for David and set up a lamp for my anointed one. I will clothe his enemies with shame, but his head shall be adorned with a resplendent crown. Now, if you've been following the series, we've gone from 120 up to 132, and all of them have been pretty short so far. We get 120, short one, 121, short one, 122, short one, short one, short one, short one, short one, long one. And I think that's trying to tell us something just in structure, and that is that we've arrived. This is a song not necessarily for the road itself, but perhaps for the destination. We've got there. We've reached the holy city. So I hope that as a Christian, you're not just in it for the journey, and that you are looking forward to the destination, to the actual end, the fulfillment of your faith, being with God and seeing him face to face. Now, why do I think it might be the destination and not a song necessarily just for the road? That's because our middle chunk there, if you have a glance down from verses 6 to 10, that is in fact directly used in the dedication of the temple. So this chap Solomon, who has the final task of building God's temple in Jerusalem, he in fact directly quotes from our psalm today, when he dedicates the temple. And so what happens is he quotes from it, And then we read this in Chronicles. Don't necessarily turn there. I'll read it for you. This is what happens when this psalm is used to dedicate the temple. So he reads that, he prays that chunk, and then we read, when Solomon had finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices. The glory of the Lord filled the temple. So this psalm was to usher in God's glory into me, fill the temple. The priests could not enter the temple because the glory of the Lord filled it. And when all the Israelites saw the fire coming down from the Lord, they fell on their faces. They knelt on the pavement with their faces on the ground, and they'd recognized how great the Lord was. We then read, the king and all the people offered sacrifices before the Lord, and Solomon offered something like 22,000 cattle and 120,000 sheep and goats. Crikey. So with the above words, Solomon inaugurates the dedication of the temple. So if you also glance down as well, you'll have noticed a couple of temple-like themes. Ark, priests, stuff like that. We're in the temple. The ark has been brought in from these faraway places like Ephaphra and Yah, and has been placed in the center of the temple. So it's God in his city with his people in that place, and it's this psalm that is used to dedicate it. So it's strange then, perhaps, that this road ends in a temple. And what's the main function of the temple? It's quite simply a bit similar to what's in front of us now, a bit similar to communion. It is atonement. The road that we're journeying on ends in atonement. It ends in a sacrifice. So it's more common these days to have a view of a journey, perhaps a Robert Louis Stevenson-like view, where it's better to travel hopefully than ever to arrive. But for the pilgrim and for you, it's a very different mindset. When we set out on that journey, when we first thought about becoming Christians, we were interested in that final destination. I hope you're in it this morning, not as a tourist, but as a pilgrim. Not as someone who's just watching from the sidelines, but who's someone who's participating, who's involved. And that's what the invitation is. It's to receive the blessings that come from this central location, that come from what is absolutely important, this atonement. And as we take a look at it, it's reasonably long and pretty complicated, isn't it, this one? So we can view it pretty simply and take the complexity and chunk it up, hopefully. So what we can do is just split it right down the middle, split it in half. And what we can do is view it perhaps under two schemes: David's promises to God, and then more importantly even, God's sure promises to David. So we read in 1:3-2 and verse 2. He swore an oath to the Lord and made a vow to the Mighty One of Jacob. This is a song to remember someone else's obedience. This is to remember David's obedience. And perhaps for the Christian, it might be to remember Jesus' obedience. But right here and right now, we're talking about David and his promises to God. And this whole first chunk from verses 1 to 10 could be seen as his ascending to God, his wanting to worship him. So it's him lifting up his heart in worship and obedience to the Lord. But for all of his ascending and for all of his obedience, and it's a lot, this is an impressive amount of obedience. This is an impressive thing that David's setting out to do. He said, I'm not going to rest. I'm not going to sleep. This is something I can give my life to. I'm going to pour it out and try and build this house for God. He's poured himself out and is ascending, is sending all this stuff God's way. He's poured out his life towards him. For all of that, he finds a God who descends to him. He ascends right to the top of the mountain, and yet even once he's exerted himself to his most, he actually finds a God who's descended down to him. So for all of our work, effort maybe, in walking the Christian life, it is based upon and rooted in his descent to us, not necessarily our ascent to him. So a certain book that we've been promoting for to help understand the series we've been in is a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction by this chap, Eugene Peterson. And I thought it'd be good to actually use some of his book for our headers of where we're going to go next and try and draw out some things from this psalm. So he says, Psalm 132 shows obedience as a lively and adventurous response of faith that is rooted in historical fact and reaches into a promised hope. So I love his description of obedience, something lively, active, not dull. We tend to think of obedience as rules and regs. We think, I'm going to have to keep within the bounds, keep my head down, and do what someone else tells me to do. There's a little bit of that, but David's phrasing it very differently, isn't he? He's saying, this is something in which I cannot just perform a duty, but something in which I have passion and energy for. I'm not going to sleep because this is going to consume me so much. So David's obedience here is in fact this, it's almost a colourful-like description. And you see a little bit of the spark and the passion behind what was driving this guy. And have you got that? Or maybe it's disappeared. Or if you do have it now, how can you cultivate it and make it grow even further? And this is how we read of his active obedience in this lively duty, as it were, in the message. It translates something like this. I'm not going home. I'm not going to bed. I'm not going to sleep. I'm not going to even take time to rest until I find a home for God. This is something that he could absolutely give his life and pour his life out for. And if that is just seeming so far away from what your experience is, then maybe the Psalms are something that you can bring more into your life, that you can grab and make your own. Maybe if we express ourselves in this passionate, full, emotional way, rather than the British stiff upper lip towards God, then maybe we can find some of that spark that evidently David has. And so it's not just obedience out of nowhere, but obedience that's rooted in history. Obedience on this ancient road. It is in no way a new road. This is something that people would have been doing in Jerusalem for years and years past, and it's something that those on this Songs for the Road, on this ascent to Jerusalem, would have been calling to mind. This is not a new road. You're not the first on it. You won't be the last. It's leading somewhere. It's an old road, and it's the right road. Many people have travelled it before. This isn't something new or novel. And so potentially it's something where we don't have to reinvent the wheel every Sunday. We're in fact coming back and remembering, just like we've done here, remembering old truths that have come to us today in a new and fresh way by God's Spirit. If we could move the slide just to the next one, please, that'd be fantastic. I'm having some trouble with my clicker. Thank you. So This is obedience that's to be practiced on an ancient road. We're not here reinventing the faith Sunday by Sunday. That is established. It's rooted in this little green book in front of you, and nobody should veer from it. And a bit like the viewing that wheel, we might be able to make nice little additions. I'm sure the engineers at Audi are very pleased with their latest kind of Formula One style tire. It's been its latest spec. It's got all of the mod cons, but nobody's improved upon the wheel. The wheel isn't going anywhere. And just like our guy with triangular shaped bicycle wheels, he's going to find that pretty tricky. So if anything, church might actually look a bit samey week to week. It might look a little bit like this next week. We're going to sing God's praises. We're going to remember Jesus in communion. And someone is going to speak God's word to us. We're going to fellowship together. We're going to serve in various different ways. In that regard, it's probably going to look pretty similar week in, week out. And I hope that's okay. But what we've got to make sure is that this isn't an excuse to just move into formalism. This isn't an excuse to stagnate. This is prompting us towards that lively and passionate spark-like obedience that David had. He wasn't going to sleep. He wasn't going to rest until he'd made a home for the Lord. Where's God called you and asking you to channel that energy? And I think perhaps the application for us in this obedience rooted in history is just to take stock and think, okay, we're on the right road. It's an old road. People have done it before and we'll be doing it again. And we're to encourage one another on this road, whether we're journeying it for the first time or whether we've been up to Jerusalem loads. We stopped counting years and years and years ago. But we are all on that same road, headed towards the temple, to God, to a sacrifice, and heading to the holy city. And that's where the road ends. It's been a long, it'll be a long road, a windy one, ups and downs, dark sorrow, radiant joy, and everything in between. That full scope of human emotion is what we're to bring to God on that journey. He's journeying it with us now, but it ends in an eternal city. So let's have a read about what this eternal city is going to be like, what the characteristics of this city might be. So from verse 13, "For the Lord has chosen Zion, he's desired it for his dwelling, saying, 'This is my resting place forever and ever. Here I will sit enthroned, for I have desired it. I will bless her with abundant provisions. Her poor I will satisfy with food. I'll clothe her priests with salvation. But her priests with salvation, and her faithful people shall ever sing for joy.'" There is a lot of exciting stuff happening in this eternal city. Food for the poor, abundant joy. If we think into some of the New Testament's descriptions of what heaven will be like, no more tears, no more pain, all of the stress and strife of earth will be gone, and you'll be with him. But for all the perks, for all of the there'll be no toothache, for all of the there'll be no pain, for all of the tears are dried and we're in paradise, the most important thing is that he is there. The most important thing is that he is there. He's desired it for his dwelling, and this will be his resting place forever and ever. And if you're not in it to go see him at the end, then it's really not worth the effort. We might compare it perhaps to the Muslim hope, which would be something like paradise. So there's no pain, yeah? There's plenty of food. Everything's set out This all looks like a pretty neat place to be. But Allah's not there. It's just this glorified playpen where we're just, there's no pain, there's all the perks of paradise, as it were, but that's missing. It's missing that crucial thing, isn't it? He's there. And we need to be on our way to actually go see him, to go see the Lord. And so, as we draw to a close, let's just remind ourselves of where we've been in taking a look at Psalm 132. It's a road that requires obedience. It ends in a temple, in an atonement, and being led into God's presence. And those two go hand in hand, as we've just seen this morning. Sacrifice and God's presence. That's what Jesus has opened up for us, and that's where we're all headed. This road invites a lively and active obedience. We're not to stagnate, but we're to have this spark-like desire to fulfill this one passion of serving the Lord. And he's going to journey it with you now, and you're on your way to see him face to face. And I think the verse that aptly describes this for the New Testament and for the New Testament believer is found in Hebrews 12, 1-3. So I'm just going to read that to you to close. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, so that's those who've been there and done it already and those who are with us now, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Go for that obedience. Throw off things that are in the way. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, that ancient road, the right road, that is on the way to Jesus. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. He's at the end, and he's who you're going to see face to face. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.